You're listening to the LMC Radio Network, broadcasting out of Forestville, California, on the World Wide Web at LuckyMojo.com.
It's Monday once again. Here we go, everyone. Spilled the energy. Reverend James, hit the music.
Welcome to Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places, exploring the magical world around us, only on the LMC Radio Network. Have you ever wondered, from temples located on windswept mountain terraces to ancient monolithic structures built in unexpected locations whose patronage has long since been lost to history, the stories of the spiritual earth resound with amazing tales still untold. There are so many fantastic, exciting, and curious things that make up this world we share. Come join us as we explore the spiritual, magical, and wondrous phenomena that enrich our souls and bring color to our days. I am your announcer, Reverend James of FolkContra.com, located in the Blue Ridge Mountains of North Carolina. This week, we welcome our special guest, Brother Christopher of the Association of Independent Readers and Root Workers, AIR, and runeworker.com in Long Beach, California, bringing us today's topic, Mapping Your Spiritual Geography. In just a moment, we'll be joined by our host, Reverend Art of FolkContra.com in North Carolina, and our guest, Brother Christopher. Make sure you're logged in to Blog Talk Radio and join the discussion via the chat. Now let's catch up with our host, Reverend Art. Take it away.
Thank you, Reverend James, and welcome everyone to Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places. It's Monday yet again. I can't believe how fast this week has flown by. So many things going on, preparing for the Hoodoo Heritage Festival coming up in just a couple short months. Tickets are selling like mad. Really excited for that event and just all the other wonderful things that we have really growing in building for this year. Before we get into our topic for today, though, let's jump it back over to you, Reverend James. How are you? What's new with you?
I've been, like you said, working on getting those goodie boxes ready for June 10th and 11th, and making sure that everybody has something wonderful to open up whenever they get their box, to work on all of our fantastic workshops at the Hoodoo Heritage Festival, and also preparing for a Vajrayogini Buddhist retreat coming up in the next few weeks. So those of you who have strong desires and attachments, if you would like to have your name dedicated during my retreat, I'd be happy to do that. Just reach out to me via email at one of our websites, folkconjure.com or folkfaithministries.com.
Excellent, excellent. And I can't wait to see what you come up with for your goodie box this year. You definitely set yourself a high bar last year with the surprise hidden traveling altar that your goodie box turned into. So I'm sure you're going to have something just as outstanding for this year. All right. So let's jump in now with our guest, Brother Christopher, joining us here today. How are you doing, Brother Christopher?
Hi, Reverend Art. I'm doing well today. Just spent the day getting prepared for this and reading candles and, like spiritual stuff.
Yeah, man.
Suddenly, my brain just went blank, and I don't know what to say. So, yeah.
Trust me, it happens all the time. But sounds like you're hard at work for your clients and really, really shining a light there in California. Maybe one day, I've actually been to Long Beach briefly.
Oh.
I'm hoping to make it back out there and exploring the region even more in the future. It was really a neat area. What's like the spiritual climate out there? How would you describe it out there?
All over the place in the first and foremost. Long Beach is its own city within the greater Los Angeles area and LA County. And it sits along the boundary of LA County and Orange County, with Orange County historically being a very conservative county and LA County being a much more liberal and progressive county. And Long Beach sits on the boundary between those two. And so it sort of gets pulled between the two forces in that sense. So we have some areas. We have some areas that are very conservative, and then we have other areas that are exploding with people living different lifestyles and expressing themselves in unique and different ways. And it's an interesting place to live. And I didn't grow up in Long Beach, but I grew up not too far away. And so when I finally moved out, Long Beach is where I found myself, and I love it here. It's great. It has sort of quiet, small-town vibes, but at the same time, you're close to a big city, and it can feel like a big city. And so there are arts things. There's a vast diversity of food and cultures that can be encountered and learned about. And at the same time, there's both a lot and sometimes almost nothing to do, which is confusing.
Kind of true of just about anywhere, but it's that last bit. But that's one thing. Even though I was only there probably at best maybe about 4 or 5 hours, it was part of exploring the area. I was actually staying in San Clemente at the time.
Oh, okay.
You could just feel that there was a richness to the community, and that's I've hoped to be able to get back there and explore. We talked with Heidi Holton on our previous show about the St. Augustine down in Florida. Another town is so you when you just walk the streets, you could just feel that there's so much more to it. And I think you just wrote the travel brochure for me.
I hope so. I mean, I've lived here for so long, and I like it here. And even though it's California, which is so expensive to live in quite often, and just finding, like, you know, housing, like actual housing, like, yeah, apartments are fine and all, but at some point you want to own your own property and have more than, you know, like the 800 square feet that you pay rent on every month.
Right.
And there's being able to buy that in California is kind of indicative that you make six figures and probably work a whole high profile job or jobs, plural.
Oh, wow.
So sometimes I find myself looking at housing and stuff in other states, because even though I was born here, my parents came from North Dakota and Indiana, and their family is scattered all over the place, especially my dad's side of the family. Pretty much anybody that I find who has my father's last name, probably a distant cousin. Probably. That's what my mom told me, and she got that information from one of my dad's cousins who did a lot of genealogy tracking and family tree building. And I think he may still be alive, because last I checked, he was like 80-something. And he lived outside of St. Louis, Missouri, in Grafton, I think it was. So, yeah. I kind of look to those places just because they interest me, but upstate New York, but then that's like a whole level of cold that I don't know if I can adapt to. Being a California boy, like 10-foot snow blizzards. Yikes. Yeah,
exactly. Growing up in the frozen north, not quite as frozen as Doc Murphy, who, you know, a fellow air member of ours.
Oh, yeah.
Who's way up there in the frozen north, but having grown up along the Great Lakes, not too far from upstate New York, yeah, that the cold is definitely something. It's a drastic difference, you know.
Oh yeah,
I'm definitely loving not having to shovel a driveway, having moved to North Carolina. But so sounds like you have a lot of influence from all over the United States. And you know, things that we like to ask for all of our listeners is really, how did you come to jump into your spiritual path? What brought you to runeworker.com and to the Association of Independent Spiritual or Readers and Workers?
So the first impetus that brought me here that I can think of is that as a kid, my parents decided that I needed to get involved in extracurriculars, and so they put me into playing soccer, and I discovered in playing soccer that I just had this talent for always calling the coin toss in every game. And it got so well known that every team I joined for about the 5 to 6 years that I participated, they always had me be the one who called the coin toss every single time. Like, I don't know how it jumped from people to people who I don't think were connected from different ages, but they were just like, Chris, you call the coin toss. Okay, it's heads, and it would be heads. Oh, it's tails, and it would be tails. And people would just, like, the first time it was like, oh, okay. And then, you know, the fifth game down the road, they're like, how does he do that? Like, what is going on here? And then many years later, my best friend growing up, his much older sister, she became involved in Dianic Wicca. And so she bought a book for him called Wicca for the Solitary Practitioner by Scott Cunningham. And I sat down and voraciously read that book, and immediately we wanted to go just do all of these things. Excuse me. And through that process, that eventually led me to learning about the Norse runes, which I just connected with. And I'm not entirely sure why. I had my theories. My mom, originally from North Dakota, her parents were German and Swedish, and my dad was also of German ancestry, and the runes come from that part of the country. And so I'm just like, well, maybe it's just kind of there. And so I started casting runes
for myself. Almost a genetic connection.
Yeah. I started casting runes for myself and for friends and just for fun. And my friend bought me a set called The Book of Runes by Ralph Blum, which was, at that time, I believe, the only Book of Runes that was really available. I think it would be a couple years later when Edred Thorsen and his rune books would start to be published and come into circulation. And just over time, more and more books. Although, overall, there's still a lot of books written about runes and rune lore, with most of them being written more about Norse religion or Norse reconstruction or sort of overall Norse Germanic, Northern European kind of spirituality, and runes just kind of get tossed in there. Which I've studied to go along with the runes, but at the same time, I find it somewhat limiting in that sense to be like, well, if I'm going to do runes, then I guess I need to, you know, belong to some sort of Norse religious spiritual practice. And I'm just like, why? I don't, like, no thanks. And so from there, it evolved into wanting to study everything. And some of the first books that I bought, which I didn't know at the time that I bought them, were about African-American hoodoo and root work. Early versions of White Magic by Marie Laveau. That one book, I can't remember. But some of the early books that were probably like the mid to late 80s and early 90s that touched upon magic in New Orleans and the magic of the saints and hoodoo and voodoo. And I just bought those because they looked interesting when I read them, but I didn't understand that this was like a whole thing until many years later. I was in university and they had computers and they had their own sort of internet set up. And somehow I found myself to like the first iteration of the Lucky Mojo website, where you could see listings of what they had offered and click on links to sort of learn more about it. In order to actually buy it, you had to print out an order sheet, fill it out, put it into an envelope with a stamp and write the address in it and mail it to them. And then they'd mail you back or they'd call you in order to process payment. And then they'd mail you your products that you ordered, which, you know, in my early 20s, I was just like, oh, I'm not ready to do all of this yet, but I'm just going to read this website because this is interesting.
Was that the original, the Yahoo forum became the Lucky Mojo forum that we know today?
That was even before the Yahoo forums. I think this is when Yahoo was still just email and only email, and they didn't have any kind
of
listserv or anything. Like, this is like 1998, I think, or 99, possibly 2000, somewhere in there. And then once I graduated college, and I went to college outside of St. Louis, Missouri, I came back to Southern California, and I met and made some new friends who are also interested in this stuff. And one of these friends, he originally went by the name of Dr. E. And he and I would hang out and talk about stuff. And then one day, I had lost the Lucky Mojo website, and I found myself back at it. And I was like, I don't remember this site. Oh, this site had all this stuff. And I guess in that period between, which was around like 2006, that I rediscovered it for myself, I then saw that she offered a class and you could sign up for it. And I sent that to Dr. E and to some other people. And I was like, look what I found. And he messaged me back and he's like, we just signed up for that class yesterday. And I was just like, and you didn't tell me? So I jumped in on that. And I think like that very day. So I think if you look at the student list that Ms. Kat has assembled, like Dr. E's listing is he became a student a day ahead of me, possibly two. I think, I'm not sure. And then he graduated about 9 months before I did, because I just wanted to take my time a little bit more. But he also had a lot more experience in certain things because of his experience in Sansaria and Lukumi and Paolo and having worked with those things. So he kind of knew what's what when it comes to certain things more than I did. And then that just led to me coming up with the name Rune Worker as sort of a play on words between root worker and runes. And
very nice.
And then last year I got this email from Deacon Millett at Four Altars, and I was just like, yeah, I think now's the time to go pro with this. So I got that ball rolling and put it all together. I mean, I had worked for clients before, but I wasn't putting my shingle out there as much as I am now. And the websites that I had were much more simplistic. So, yeah.
I really enjoyed your website, runeworker.com, myself many times. I go through and I've read many of your blog posts and everything, and it really is a great site. And
oh, thank you.
You know, I've heard so much about Dr. E, and not having had a chance to have met him, he was one of the founding members of AIR. You know,
yes.
He was very early on in the development of a lot of the things that we do now. And I know you also work fairly closely with Dr. E's mother, Mama E, who is also a part of AIR.
Yes.
There's, you know, very, very strong history, and there's a lot of knowledge just in that small connection there between the three of you. I will say, but very, very much proud to be working with as a member of AIR. And watching all of these fantastic things to come up with. I also know I see you very often when I go to sign into Hoodoo Psychics to do readings. I see you're already there, out there offering your readings on hoodoopsychics.com. Reverend Art showing his green side, Reverend James puts into the chat. you know, it's, You really do. You bring a lot to AIR, and I know your clients speak very highly of you. I've seen a lot of testimonials and such. So good on you, and way to hold it down there in Southern California. But we did actually have a question for you in the chat, and the Red Queen asked, "Do you construct your own to bind runes?"
I do construct my own bind runes. And I feel I have a method that I'm not aware of anybody else using to do that. And also my bind runes can get very complicated. In the sense that most books about runes, when they talk about bind runes, they only recommend putting together 3 bind runes at a time. And generally the directions are you pick 3 runes that align with whatever your purpose is. And for me, I will actually do a specific reading with the runes focused on whatever my goal is or intent is, and then let the runes tell me what runes to use. And then from there, I'll put them together with my own sort of aesthetic interest involved. And this can easily take me up to like an hour just to like sit and puzzle and reprocess things and look at how things fit together until I find that connection that just makes me go, oh, there it is. That's what it is. I like the way that looks. And
like when you hear the harmony.
Yeah. And I'm not aware of any other person who works with runes doing that. Although I was at a psychic fair last year doing readings, and people who read runes are not common. Most people, they read tarot cards or playing cards, some, although that's much less common. Some people have oracle decks that they've picked up and work with. But runes, there's not a lot of rune readers. And I was doing this method that I had sort of created from various pieces of reading about how people doing readings with various things. And so part of the reading was letting the client pick what instrument that they're going to be read by, but not letting them see which instrument, so that way they don't like have the specific idea. So like they can't choose it based upon sight alone. They have to just feel, you know, which one is which. And one gentleman who came up to me he picked the runes and he was very excited. And I was like, okay, that's interesting. And so I was reading the runes for him and he was, again, very excited. And then at the end, he's like, oh, I just have to tell you, like, it's so great to meet another rune reader. I never see anybody reading runes. You know, like, I read them for myself. And apparently he lived up in the San Fernando Valley area of Los Angeles, which is about an hour or more from me, depending upon traffic. And apparently he actually taught a class on runes at a shop up by him. And so he was just really excited to see like how somebody else interpreted runes. And then in my practice, I use what's called the Anglo-Saxon Futhark, which most people are familiar with the Elder Futhark, which has, oh my gosh, I'm blinking. 27 runes, and I use the Anglo-Saxon, which has 33 runes. It adds a whole nother etier to it, plus one additional rune that has this sort of diamond structure with legs coming off of it. And I came across it, and I think I learned about it through another author called Raven Caldera, who talks about using them. And I was just like, what is this rune set? I like this rune set. I'm going to start using this rune set. And so I used I bought some special wood, and I bought some red paint and some wood carving tools, and I carved my own set of runes out of rosewood and painted them and finished them, and I have my gorgeous own personal rune set that I've used for at least 10 years now, and they're great, and it has the full Anglo-Saxon set, and a lot of people, when I read those runes, a lot of people get blown away by some of the information that I can suss out from, you know, kind of little scratches on wood, so to speak.
You know, I hadn't really thought of it during my, I guess you could call it, formative years in spiritualism and such. You know, I grew up around the Great Lakes, familiar with like Lilydale, New York, and would attend spiritual fairs, spiritual expos all over Western New York, down through most of Pennsylvania, and then through Ohio. There really aren't that many out there that offer rune readings. I've come across some that have done bone readings, Sangoma and such, but it is predominantly, I'm a little shocked right now. It's very card based, if anything at all. Oracle decks, playing cards, tarot cards, such. Perhaps this is our call to do a whole show on rune reading, hosted by Brother Christopher.
Oh dear. Okay, sure, I'm down. Yeah, like rune reading is not that common, and I also, like, I think mainly the people who do rune reading mostly stick to Norse religious communities, and it's just not that much out there, and with few exceptions, I think I've only ever seen one person who even charges for rune readings, and that her name is Freya Aswin. She wrote a book. She wrote several books, I think, at least two. And I forget where she is. I think she's in England, or possibly somewhere in like the Netherlands or Belgium or something. And I came across her site by chance. I don't know if that website is still up or not, though, because she may have taken it down or something, because it was also, like, her author site. But overall, I, like, when I've gone looking for readers, I never find people reading runes. I have found a deck of runes. Like, somebody put runes two different times. I found people who made playing cards, and they just put runes on it. And one was very modern, new age, visionary art, which I was like, this is pretty, but not mine. And another one was very simplistic, a little too simplistic and kind of ugly. And again, just wasn't feeling it. Like, it's like, no, this isn't cute. I think I did buy that deck because it wasn't very expensive, and it was the only way I could really look at the cards, because they didn't have, like, certain shops I've come across have, like, a binder of, like, preview cards so you can see how right. the artwork is, and they just didn't have any preview cards for that deck. And it was a small deck, so at the time it was only, like, $8. So I was just like, okay. That's fine. So I bought it to get a look at it, and I looked at it, and then I was like, nah, thanks. This isn't cute. I can't read this and like feel serious about it and do readings for people with it. Maybe someday I might get inspired and make my own rune deck, but I'm not that great of an artist. I would have to hire an artist and work with them to like design the imagery. And I'm not sure if I'm ready for that yet.
A lot of patience in the design side of things, but I honestly, if anybody can do it and do it justice, it would be you, my friend. But, you know, why don't we take this feels like a good spot. Why don't we take a break and get a message from our sponsors? Reverend James, why don't you jump in here? And I think we're having some pre-Mercury retrograde difficulties.
LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Sundays 3 to 4:30, Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places with Reverend Art and Reverend James Mondays 4 to 5:30, the Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain Tuesdays 5 to 6, The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Phoenix LaFay Thursdays 1 to 2, and Blue Flag Root Radio with Lady Muse Fridays 7 to 8, all time specific, add 3 hours for Eastern. All of our shows are available in archives at the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com, where you will see them listed by title and episode and with clickable links. Sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com.
Support for this program is provided by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and located online at luckymojo.com. And by the Association of Independent Readers and Rootworkers, AIR, a directory of ethical and authentic conjure practitioners located online at readersandrootworkers.org. And by Hoodoo Psychics, the first psychic line run entirely by Hoodoo practitioners. Receive a reading with a trusted rootworker instantly. Call 1-888-4-HOODOO or visit hoodoopsychics.com. And by the Crystal Silence League, a free online prayer service of the Association of Independent Spiritual Churches, located online at crystalsilenceleague.org. Thank you to all of our sponsors. Back to you, Reverend Art.
Thank you for that, Reverend James. You know, it's just funny because if something technological is going to go wrong, chances are it's going to be my fault. That was just, you know, incoming Mercury retrograde. Completely there, but I wanted to make sure that we definitely gave enough time for our actual topic for tonight with mapping your geographical, mapping your spiritual geography. And Brother Christopher, what is mapping your spiritual geography?
Well, the idea I had behind that phrase is getting to know the spirits and spiritual energies of where you live and what exists there. I definitely have an animistic bent to some of my practice in that I see spirits being in everything and everywhere, and both spirit with a capital S, in terms of sort of a higher all-creative power, but also spirit
right.
as individual non-corporeal intelligences that exist and operate in this world with us and around us, that most of humanity is not always aware of unless these spirits make a big demonstration of being present. And so it's something that I've done in my practice, especially in living in Long Beach, where there is, on the surface, it can look very mundane, but when you start to just scratch and go a little bit deeper, you quickly find that there is a lot more going on here than what it looks like to most people. And even to other people involved in occult and magical practices, because some people just either the only spirits they concern themselves with are ones that are found in medieval grimoires or ones that are prescribed by a religion that they practice, and so they tend to ignore other spiritual forces that surround them and work with them. So
it's very interesting
that,
already. You already have my wheels turning, because where we're at is, I mean, we're in Appalachia, we're in former Cherokee Nation, you know.
Definitely, and that's also something I'll touch on as well, is that, I mean, especially, like, in the sense of, like, the European history that came with the colonists and so forth who came to the Americas, like, that's a whole other layer of kind of spiritual influence that exists. But then underneath that is all of the Native American cultures that existed here before. And I'll just say that much about it right now and save some more words for it later. And so, you know, oftentimes when people who get into this practice, I find most of them don't really pay attention to that kind of spiritual existence around them, as they're just really focused on learning spells or conjuring spirits or communing with other spirits that they're interested in, whether they're practicing like a religion that is foreign or native to them, and not really trying to do those things. And although, interestingly enough, if you just talk to people, people often have ideas of where some of these spiritually different places are, and sometimes the spirits that are present. You may talk to people and they'll talk about that haunted house at the edge of town that, you know, is an abandoned house that just never got torn down for some reason, but now it's haunted, and in the past a witch used to live there. or perhaps that spot out in the woods that, you know, the kids, that teenage kids go and do sort of bravery tests at to see who could step foot into it and stay there the longest before they get spooked or creeped out and run out, and their friends, you know, call them chicken, but, you know, they're also too afraid to really hang out there more than 15 minutes at a time. And of course, if for people who are used to living in big cities, it can even seem even more estranged from our day-to-day lives, because cities just have so much people and so much action and activity happening all the time.
Right.
That we often forget that there are spirits that exist in cities, and there are stories, and, you know, especially when the city is, you know, 100 years old, 200 years old, 300 years old, that there are some buildings that may have been there for all of those centuries and have stories, and, you know, people don't like to stay in them after the sun goes down, because that's when spooky, unexplainable, weird shit happens. Ooh, sorry.
No, that's perfectly fine. But you're right. Yeah, like you really, a lot of interesting points is, you know, the connection of the land to the practice is it could be huge, honestly.
Yeah, it can definitely be huge, and it can come with some interesting things that happen, both good and bad, depending upon how one approaches it or doesn't approach it. And it's always something that's interested me, especially because when I first started getting into this, I personally didn't know much about any kind of the folklore or urban legends of where I lived and operated mainly because a lot of portions of, like, the city where I grew up in, it really only became a city in the 20th century. And there were some farmers who lived there before that, but it wasn't really populated. And whereas Long Beach, where I live now, it was established much earlier. And there's also the history of other people who lived here before. Before Americans came and settled California, it was settled and colonized by the Spanish. And before them, of course, there were the Native Americans here. And all of them have left their fingers and their marks upon it in different ways, with some ways being much more obvious than others. But of course, nowadays, more information is coming out as the local Native populations fight to be recognized and protect some of what they recognize as their history and culture that existed before the Spanish came. And so for me, a lot of this started with just like trying to dig up folklore and history about where I lived and about the people who lived here. And oftentimes history can be easy to find, especially in this day and age. The internet can have a wealth of information about the history of the place, even just starting on Wikipedia and reading, you know, it was founded on this time, these people were involved, so on and so forth. And if you live in a town where there is that interest, then they might have a historical society, and they could have preserved documents and effects and stories that they've collected and had donated to them by, you know, descendants of early community members who continue to live in the area and feel, you know, that they can't keep these things anymore, but they want them to be preserved. And so there's a historical society that does that. And we, Long Beach has a historical society, and actually once a year for one day in October, usually just before Halloween, there is a cemetery there here in Long Beach that was the oldest cemetery for the area. It was established as a cemetery, I think, in the 1890s. But the first person buried there, or the first formal burial, because I found out when I went on this tour last year that there are pauper's graves in the northeast corner. So essentially filled with people who have no names, weren't identified, did not have money to afford a proper burial, and that's where the early city buried them. And then the rest of the cemetery was just established around it because, well, these are already graves, so might as well let everybody else get in on this. And so they actually get volunteers from the community, from the Historical Society, and these volunteers take the information that the Historical Society has, and they have access to period costumes and that information, and they put together 15-minute performances talking about the person, what they did, what is known about them based upon the documentation that's available. And they do this every year, and they do different people inside the cemetery. And they actually recently, the oldest cemetery was also right next to a plot of land that was established as a cemetery later, but it was kept by a private nonprofit corporation. And then a few years ago, there was some financial misdealings by one of the new caretakers and he apparently stole quite a bit of money from the trust fund for the cemetery. And so the city of Long Beach then took over that cemetery, and so now the Historical Society has actually expanded their tour to both cemeteries, and they can now do deeper research on all the sort of influential and founding members of the city of Long Beach who are also buried in that cemetery next door, and they can spread it out, and it's a big production. It was very interesting and entertaining to go to. And each step on the tour moves you forward from the earliest days of Long Beach in the late 19th century up until, I think, the last moment that they presented this past year was 1970. And, you know, this company and its CEO who were wheeling and dealing in politics in the city and kept managing to somehow influence the city to give them beneficial deals to build buildings in certain areas. And, you know, interestingly enough, the three people involved in this all happen to be buried within like 60 feet of each other in the same cemetery. Because they've all since passed away, because they were, cause in the 70s, they were, like, in their 50s. And, you know.
It's a very interesting way to keep the history of the land alive. And this is honestly something I've never heard of any historical society doing. I mean, I come from Pennsylvania, where there are things like, you know, Civil War reenactments and Gettysburg and
mm-hmm.
And things of that nature, but I mean, this is like a template that could be used by historical societies all over the United States to really, you know, remind people of that, of the history of the land, of the spirituality of the land, the spirit that
mm-hmm.
is in the land, I guess is maybe more to the point, you know, reminding people about, you know, the history of the Spanish moving in, the history of the Native American people that were that lived on that land. It's an awesome kind of a program that they have going on there. You'll have to keep me posted on dates for these for the future. We might have to correlate any Western travel to be able to experience this myself or ourselves.
Sure.
It's actually really interesting too. Balkan Diviner in the chat mentioned that in Romania, their historical buildings haunted by people who work there day and night to finish them. And especially the House of Parliament that the dictator, I'm going to murder this, Nicolae Ceausescu. And Balkan Diviner, if you're listening, you can tell me how well I did. Ordered lots of people in impoverished conditions to work at that building. This really comes into play, I would say, in understanding the spiritual geography of an area or honestly of a region. Wasn't as bad as you think it was. Okay. I feel better now.
It probably wasn't as good as one might think it was either.
And then
Balkan Diviner asked about poltergeist activity, and I haven't come across poltergeist activity, but my first experience with that cemetery, it's by a street that I tend to pass by often or use when driving around town often. And I think it was the second or third time driving past it, and I just got this wave of anger. And I was like, what is that? And I just followed it where I felt it, and I'm looking at the cemetery because I happen to be stopped at a stoplight, and I'm looking at the cemetery, and I'm just like, why is this cemetery so mad? And this cemetery is so old that it doesn't have any interments for the last 50 years, like the old part of the cemetery.
Oh.
And because it's so old and the way it's laid out, it is the witchcraft cemetery. Like, that is, if you're doing necromantic stuff, that is the cemetery people go to. And this anger that I felt, I talked to my spirit guides, and they explained to me that essentially the spirits inside of it were upset because they had been used and disrespected. The people were just going there and using the cemetery for their own purposes, but not treating the spirits in there with respect and not respecting the protector and the keeper of the cemetery and just the whole thing. And
this is
so
why we tell people to be very careful with graveyard work.
Yes.
Know what you're doing.
And so
respect who you're working with.
I got some information on how I could deal with this. And so I respectfully set foot inside there, and I laid out offerings and provided them to the spirits. And it really went, at least for me, from night to day, where just that sort of flashing, hot, angry energy that was coming off just cooled off and went away, and things felt appeased and satisfied. And so I'll periodically go there and leave offerings behind just to give and say thanks, you know, for whatever you do. And I do have graveyard dirt from a grave from a city father, well, a city father and his wife, who are buried in that cemetery. And whose name actually is one of the streets in the city, which I often wondered, why is this street named this? And because it is very distinct and different from all the other streets around it. All the other streets are in alphabetical order, going from on one side to A, all the way down to, I think it stops at like N at the other end. Before a different street naming convention came up, because that's a part of the city that was developed at a later time. But this one street, it goes like A, B, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, and then an I, just instead of an I name, it's Cherry. And it's just like, why? And the street actually is named Cherry for many miles. I think, I'm not exactly sure. I think at least 20 miles it has the name Cherry. And then it flips from there and becomes where it enters into another part of LA County. And actually, I think it's part of the city of LA. And then it switches to Garfield. And I think that's because of another city founder who is influential in that area of Los Angeles, and his last name is Garfield. So they named that street Garfield, and when they connected these streets, because they happened to line up, this part of town kept the name Cherry, and that part of town kept the name Garfield. It's entertaining, at least to me. And so he and his wife, like, they were city founders and influencers. And he was also apparently a Freemason, because you have one of the common symbols of Freemasonry, the compass with the big G in the middle, is on their tombstone. Okay. And that was the graveyard dirt that I was directed to pay for and work with. When I went and collected graveyard dirt. So,
well, it actually, it kind of makes sense. You're doing a service to the spirit of the land. You were providing offerings to those who had been used and abused, and you know, really offering back. So it makes sense to me that one of the city elders would say, "I would love to work with you. Let's do this." You know, actually, a question that I have is, again, I hadn't considered the whole concept of the spiritual geography of the land. Would you say, in your estimation or in your experience, that the spiritual geography of an area could potentially predispose, I guess is the word I'm looking for, predispose an area to being haunted? Like, we have shows like Ghost Hunters and things of that nature that talk about, you know, the insane asylums and things of that nature. But do you think there's a connection there?
It really depends upon the land. I think a lot of hauntings that are haunted places happen. They happen mainly because of human action. And the building itself doesn't necessarily influence it per se, other than what it's used for. So like asylums get the rap of being haunted because of their being tied into people with mental health and behavioral health issues. And of course, older asylums, just the world in general, and I think also specifically Western society, did not really treat people with mental health very well. And in the early days, abuse, neglect, and just straight up violence were common. And a lot of this continued, and in some cases still continues to this day, but the worst of it was definitely in the past, where asylums might even be used for exploitation by people who wish to get rid of troublesome people. I think of one story coming out of Los Angeles of how the LAPD back in the 1920s and 30s, maybe the 30s, a woman's son was kidnapped and she couldn't find him, and the LAPD tried to make this end. And so they said they found her son and brought her a young boy who looked like her son but wasn't her son. And yeah, like, what do you do when the LAPD does this? Like, you're just, and they act like they did something great, and you're standing there, and you're supposed to be thankful, and instead you're just sort of shell-shocked and in disbelief. And so when she finally rejected it, you know, the LAPD decided that she was causing them problems, so they charged her with insanity and threw her into asylum, where she was abused before she learned how to play the game. And she managed to fight her way out through the legal system and get the LAPD exposed because of a influential radio person who also happened to be a Methodist minister, who had a radio show, took interest in her and, you know, wanted to help her. And unfortunately, she never found her son, but I believe about 10 years after she was released and she forced the LAPD to assist her and other people in finding their missing kids, they did find a bunch of people's kids at a farm out in Riverside, where this dude who was some kind of serial killer had, you know, would abduct these kids and then take them back to the farm. And they even found buried bodies on the farm, in the area where he tried to hide the bodies. And he was eventually caught. Apparently he had like family in Canada, and the U.S. and the federal law enforcement notified Canada that they believed he was on the run and he might try and make contact with his family in Vancouver, British Columbia. And he did. And Canadian Mounties arrested him and took him in. So, yeah,
that's pretty intense.
So asylums developed this because of the abuse and the violence against people with mental health issues that happen in these places years ago. And if these buildings are still standing, just like, you know, the mental anguish and the horror and the chaos, just I feel like it's clearly probably has left some sort of resonance on the space. And I haven't personally been to an abandoned asylum or a condemned asylum and really checked it out, but even if there's no spirits of the dead haunting it, that vibration just attracts spirits that will enjoy that kind of energy. And they may sort of slink around and haunt it and, you know, use it to scare and spook people who go to visit it or try to contact spirits within it. Even if these people haven't done any research on the space, because, you know, it was still a hospital. Like, it's entirely possible that people with mental health issues may have, you know, lived and died in these asylums, even if their death was reasonably peaceful and their life was, you know, not pleasant, but not necessarily violent and horrible and filled with abuse or really gnarly bad physical abuse. So their spirits could be there, but I suspect it's spirits of other things that are just drawn to that kind of energy. And that's a lot of what like supernatural and paranormal investigators tend to find.
Reverend James and myself, we've gone on some outings, I guess you could say, a few of the more famous locations. I was just kind of curious your take on like the ghost hunting thing, like with the lands being, because I've heard the phrase, the land is just bad. And that phrase came back to me as I was contemplating tonight's show, you know, with spiritual geography, as if that's actually true. When we've attended like in Mansfield, Ohio, the Ohio State Reformatory, and in Western Pennsylvania, there's a place called Hillview Manor that really. I mean, you can definitely feel the energy there. The conversation for another show. And we talked about it, too, with our friend JD in the very first Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places. We talked about Haunted Detroit, you know. But it just really brought that back to me, thinking, okay, spiritual geography, is there a connection? But you very well went into that topic and that subject. So other than, we have, let's see, roughly about 18 minutes left here today. Other than like historical societies and things of that nature, in doing research on trying to map your spiritual geography, are there any better websites that you feel people should use, that maybe something that's more common?
I mean, there are websites that talk about hauntings and paranormal. And some of them are websites that were created by people who have published books about hauntings and paranormal activity and stuff like, there's quite a few books about like weird California. And I imagine that like there's also like a weird or haunted New York, weird or haunted There's
weird
probably
Pennsylvania.
Even like local books. Weird Pennsylvania. There's probably even a weird and haunted North Carolina, maybe Charlotte or Raleigh. Can't remember the names out there. And that's look for. And then of course, if you can look into Native American stuff for your area, for example, where I live, the name usually associated with the Native American tribes around here is the Tongva, but they're also called Gabrielinos, and I think they have another name that I can't use as often. Because the Tongva was like one village of this overall people. And then Gabrielinos, because the first Spanish mission that was built out here was San Gabriel, and so they just applied the name of Gabriel to all of them, called them Gabrielinos. And the Los Angeles Times, I think it was in 2019, published a interactive map of all of the sort of documented historical information of Tongva people and cultural centers in and around the greater Los Angeles metro area. So they actually went outside of LA County and into parts of Orange County and Riverside and I believe up into Ventura County, which is north of us, because there were locations out there as well. And in Long Beach, it turns out, is actually one of their sort of main holy sort places. I don't remember the name for it, but interestingly enough, this place has been the site of many civil court cases, or the point of argument of many civil court cases, started back in the 80s, if I remember correctly. And I found a website that was created by Tongva people, which had reverse documented all of the sort of legal issues about it. And the site is fortunately still undeveloped, but I can't find any deciding information about how this court case was closed or finalized, or if it was settled out of court or anything like that. So I don't know. It could still be in court. It could have been settled and they just never the settlement was never published or announced in any significant way or in any way that just didn't come up on the internet. But it sits on the grounds of a local Cal State University. And back in the 80s, as this university was expanding, they wanted to develop the property out there. And the Tongva people turned out in a massive group to protest and push back against this, arguing that this was their holiest of sites, and that building buildings on top of it was a deeply offensive action to do. And whereas the Cal State University Long Beach is just like, well, it's our land, we can do what we want. And the Tongva is like, it's not your land. Like, just because you happen to own it doesn't mean you can build on it. And in the past, apparently, there was a natural spring that was on the land. But I think that spring is gone, because I think an earthquake may have shifted the land, and so the water doesn't come out there anymore. But if I remember what I read correctly, it was believed that this spring is where their first god sort of arose. And then from the mud at the spring is how he formed all the people. And so this is like the source of their creation, and that everything that exists comes from this place. The origin. This is the origin point. And so I believe about once a year there is some sort of gathering at that spot where they perform rituals and do stuff. I can't find any information about when it happens, but when I was reading this, I was like, oh my God, like, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Like, this is huge. But then at the same time, I'm just like, but I'm not Tongva. This isn't my culture. It's not my place.
Right.
I will respect it. And I will be aware of it being there, but I'm not going to go there and try and do stuff. And I have zero experience, or I've never had any of spiritual entity come up and be like, I'm a spirit of the Tongva, and I want you to go to this place. And so I'm just like, it's there, you're chill, I'll be chill, let's be chill together over here. And that's sort of, when it comes to Native American stuff, that's also what I recommend for most people. Like, unless you are for sure Native American, or you are having contact with these spirits of these tribes in your area, and you have managed to confirm that these are legitimate experiences with members of these peoples, which would, I imagine, be very difficult to do, and they probably wouldn't be a big fan of you trying to claim that, then you shouldn't really go tromping around on them trying to stir up stuff and see what's there. Like, educate yourself, know that it's there, recognize that it's there, put out offerings, but don't try to, like, physically force or, you know, actually claim in reality that you have any kind of authority or right to be talking or representing or dealing with any of that, per se.
Provide the respect that's due.
Exactly. Be respectful, honor these things, but don't go, this is one time where you don't want to fuck around and find out.
Right.
Very,
if you've never seen Poltergeist, just kidding. I had to throw a reference in.
Also, there's other stuff too. I swear I remember some other movie or show about something where, you know, somebody pissed off Native American spirits and it just caused them problems. Or at least that's what they were told by psychics and mediums who came along much later. And besides, we have European culture all around us that we've built up around us. And there's tons of interactive points that one can interact with in any sort of urban, suburban, or even a rural setting to work with. You know, churches. While churches in Europe were often built upon, you know, pre-Christian locations, churches in the United States, like, I don't feel like their locations were necessarily chosen at random.
Nope.
You know, like the people who picked those places for those churches picked those because they felt something there. And it's pretty easy to walk up to a church and get the feeling like, oh, is this church alive, really, really alive with spirit? Yes or no. Like, you know, you can tell.
Very true.
And, yeah, we spend a lot of time talking about cemeteries. Cemeteries are where the dead are buried. And these dead have history and information. And learning about them so you can learn their likes and their identities and their personalities. And of course, you know, like in hoodoo and in root work, working with spirits of the dead is a commonplace thing. And being able to know, you know, like, okay, this spirit of the dead was a good spirit who was a successful businessman and also a leader in their church. Let's work with them, you know, or, you know,
right.
We've managed to establish that this spirit was a loving mother of 12 and she helped she helped raise, she worked to raise her children and also establish, you know, the first school in this area. You know, she might be somebody,
right,
work, you know, to work with. Other places that you can find some different spirits are like libraries, universities, schools, especially older ones. So they were built in like the last century or before. And you can find like spirits of knowledge and wisdom and understanding who can help you teach stuff. And some libraries and universities, they also hide forgotten occult texts that were published in the last 50 to 100 years in the United States. And those
very
spirits
true
there might be able to hook you into something.
That's one thing, too, that I wanted to mention and probably show my age is,
okay,
while we do live in the age of the internet, there's still value to be found in researching all of these things we've talked about on microfilm and microfiche.
Oh, yeah.
That, you know, they're hiding in stacks in libraries, on college campuses, and the, I call them the more the legacy libraries of regions, where if you really want to get to know the land and the lay of the land, the development of the land, overlook the original internet.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause all these microfiche and stuff, they have, you know, the copies of newspapers for as long as,
yes,
the library could get their hands on it, you know, or the local university.
Well, like in my hometown,
all of that information.
You know, I'm from Pennsylvania, where, you know, we've been around one of the original 13 colonies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are actual copies of newspapers kept on microfilm from the 1850s and beyond, and previous. There's,
oh, wow,
all kinds of information there, and some of them are harder to read. But, you know, when you're looking at a microfilm, or you're looking through using a microfiche, there is no algorithm sorting what you're looking at.
Yeah. It's all just
nobody's bastardizing the results of what you're looking at. It's very important to
that's
yourself
true
to do this for yourself. The Red Queen said, Google is not always truthful. Amen. Can I get an amen?
This is true. especially in this day of AI, where literally you can get a computer to spout truthful-sounding bullshit. And all sorts of people are using it for stuff because writing is hard, and having to like write a paper is difficult, or writing a blog post. And it's crazy to me, the things that I see. Like, I remember seeing an ad on Facebook for, oh, you know, you can use us to write blog posts. And I'm just like, wait a minute. So I click on the link, and they're like, oh, we'll use our AI, and you can write blog posts about any spiritual topic. And I'm just like,
I just
like
saw that
the
too
look of horror on my face. I was just like, what? Why? Like, I already have enough sort of imposter syndrome sometimes, and you're straight up telling me to, like, literally be an imposter. Like, no thanks. I don't want to do that.
Like,
that just seems wildly dishonest to me.
It does. And, you know, that's moving forward from this point. You know, I think that's one thing that a lot of people are going to really need to have in their minds, is that little bit of skepticism tells them, hey, look deeper. You know, is this person an overnight adept at whatever it is they're speaking of? You know, just did they come out of nowhere and just miraculously, you know, become an expert? These keep in mind.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm on the same page with you. And, you know, we are nearing the end of our show for tonight, and I just want to say that you really brought a lot of intriguing insight for me, and I'm sure for our listeners as well, into understanding the spiritual geography of our areas. I mean, this comes into play, you know, if we're looking to relocate, if, you know, you're trying to figure out why someplace sounds like it means something, you know, why you feel drawn to a certain place. There's so many avenues we can explore. And we already have requests for you to come back for a show on runes, Brother Christopher. So we're going to have
awesome.
To make sure that happens sometime here soon.
I'm down for that.
We will set up a date here, and, you know, everybody just keep watching Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places on Facebook and on Instagram, and we will be announcing shows upcoming every week. But that is all the time we actually have tonight, and I hope you've enjoyed your time with us this evening, Brother Christopher, and all of our listeners. Time we meet, let's keep the magic alive. Take us out, Reverend James.
Thank you, Reverend Art, and thank you, Brother Christopher of RuneWorker.com, for being our guest this week. We invite you to join us next week when our special guest from the Association of Independent Readers and Root Workers, AIR, and the Divine Harmony Spiritual Church will be Reverend John St. Germain of JohnSt.Germain.com in Knoxville, Tennessee, with a discussion on his new book, Adele Clemens, An Artist Among the Spirits, and a live palm reading event. We've come to the end of this episode of Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places, brought to you by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, on the LMC Radio Network. You can find Reverend Art at FolkConjure.com, on the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com, on readersandrootworkers.com, and on Hoodoo Psychics Thursdays and Fridays from 6 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and Saturdays and Sundays from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm your announcer, Reverend James, joining you from FolkCountry.com in North Carolina. Mystic Mages and Magical Places can be heard every week live on Blog Talk Radio at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the shows are available in archive via mysticmages.com/radio show and on the Lucky Mojo Forum. From all of us at Mystics and Mages, I'd like to thank you for being here. Be sure to follow at Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places on Facebook and at Mystics, Mages, Magical Places on Instagram for updates and news. We'll be back next week at this same time. Come sit a spell. Wink, wink. Relax and enjoy the show. We've only just begun. Thanks, everybody. Goodbye.
And definitely be sure to watch our Facebook page for an event. Signing up for free palm reading next week on Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places. We'll do that in our own special way. Have a great week, everybody.
Bye.